Section 2. Tobacco and textiles spur the transition. As you read, look for a slave's discovery that improved tobacco, how the tobacco and textile industries developed in the state, the impact of steam power on manufacturing, and the following terms, brightleaf tobacco and monopoly. In the years after the Civil War, North Carolinians did their best to take advantage of the marketing made possible by the trains. They scoured their sheds and searched their fields and forests for items they could ship and sell outside of the state. The two products that sold the best were tobacco and cotton, which prompted some North Carolinians to build their own factories and sell their finished goods for a higher price. Brightleaf tobacco. In 1852, Stephen Slade, a slave on a Caswell County plantation, discovered that controlled heat improved the curing of tobacco. The colorful result also had a fragrant smell and mild taste. Word of this discovery prompted tobacco farmers all along the Virginia border to flue-cure their tobacco. This procedure involved putting a stove just outside the tobacco barn and allowing heat into the barn through a metal pipe called a flue. The heat would dry the leaves without the smoke changing the flavor and would turn the leaves yellow. Eventually, people called this improved product brightleaf tobacco. Brightleaf tobacco became as important to North Carolina in the 1800s as naval stores had been in the 1700s because the railroad made it known worldwide. In 1865, the Union Army chased the last Confederate army to the area around Durham Station. The Yankee soldiers helped themselves to brightleaf tobacco warehoused there. Some of them liked it so much that they began to write to the Durham station master to have him send them more. This time they offered to pay for it. So John R. Green and William T. Blackwell went into business buying tobacco from nearby farmers, bagging it, and sending it out by rail. Soon after, Julian S. Carr became a partner, and they called their product Bull Durham Tobacco. Bull Durham, ground-up brightleaf tobacco sold loose in cloth bags, became one of the first famous brand names in United States history. The partners grew richer than anyone else in the state. Businessmen throughout western North Carolina competed with Bull Durham. Winston, for example, had more than 50 tobacco factories at one time or another, including one run by a young Virginian, Richard J. Reynolds. Back in Durham, Washington Duke started bagging his own tobacco at his kitchen table on his nearby farm. By 1874, Duke and Sons had started a factory next to the Bull Durham plant, just feet from the North Carolina Railroad. Buck Duke's Monopoly. In the 1880s, James Buchanan Duke, the son of Washington Duke, decided to take the next logical step in manufacturing tobacco. The mildness of bright leaf had made Americans more likely to roll cigarettes than to use the tobacco in a pipe. Where most pipe and cigar smoking involved only the mouth, cigarettes called for the smoke to be inhaled into the lungs. Cigarettes were particularly popular in northern cities where workers could keep them in their mouths and still work with both hands. Some New York City businessmen were already hiring people to roll cigarettes for sale, paying them pennies for every dozen made. Buck Duke, as he was known, learned that there were machines that could make cigarettes faster and more efficiently. During the 1880s, Duke gained exclusive rights to use one of the best machines. It had been invented by James Bonsack of Virginia. The Bonsack machine could make cigarettes 40 times faster than any human roller. By 1890, Duke and Sons had made so many cigarettes so cheaply that they had put the New York companies out of business. The Dukes became so successful that they even bought up the Bull Durham Company and most of the other factories throughout western North Carolina. By the 1890s, Buck Duke was not only the richest North Carolinian, he was one of the richest Americans. He moved to New York City to run the American Tobacco Company, although most of his cigarettes continued to be made back in Durham. Duke became known throughout the nation for his tobacco monopoly. That is, he personally controlled most of the tobacco production in the country. R.J. Reynolds, for example, sold his plug tobacco a tightly wound tobacco wad from which the user cut off pieces for chewing, through Duke's company. Duke, Carr, and other tobacco manufacturers soon put some of their wealth into the other important industry in the state, cotton textiles. The tobacco industry needed bags for its product that could be manufactured out of the cotton grown in North Carolina fields. Cotton mills along the railroads. North Carolinians had tried to build cotton mills even before they had railroads. The Whigs, who took over the state after 1835, started cotton factories on the streams of the Uwharries before the Civil War. Many did not last long. The problem of shipping the cloth on poor roads undid many manufacturers. A Wilkesboro merchant, for example, refused to accept cloth from Randolph County because it was delayed on muddy roads and became mildewed. After the Civil War, several manufacturers moved their mills to the towns along the newly rebuilt railroads. Edwin M. Holt took advantage of post-war prices to make profits in his old Alamance mill. By the 1880s, Holt's sons were operating mills around the town of Burlington. John Milton Odell, who started out as a clerk at the Cedar Falls factory on the Deep River, opened stores in Greensboro, High Point, and Concord. Odell and a group of partners bought up an old Concord factory in 1877. When Odell doubled the size of his mill in 1890, it became the state's largest cotton mill. Odell and his partners also helped establish the first cotton mills at Durham, Greensboro, Salisbury, and Bessemer City, a mill village near the depot at Gastonia. By the 1890s, cotton mills were being operated in just about every town along the North Carolina Railroad. One of the reasons Charlotte grew so big was its development of machine shops and warehouses to supply the parts for textile machines. The number of looms, the machines that weave yarn into fabric, more than doubled in the state just between 1893 and 1896. Steam power aids manufacturing. By the 1890s, just about every town in North Carolina had some sort of new factory. Most were run with steam engines, just like trains were, and no longer depended upon water power from nearby streams. Tarboro and Wilmington had plants that made fertilizer out of cottonseed. Winston and Salem, which were growing together during this time, had 8 wagon shops. Factories in Charlotte made cotton mill equipment, brooms, wagon spokes, drain pipes, saddles, mattresses, and candy. Goldsboro had a factory that polished rice. The most unusual business of all was the botanic depot of the Wallace brothers of Statesville. They bought roots, barks, berries, and herbs from merchants in the mountains and shipped them to drug companies in the north. They marketed more than 2,000 different items that grew naturally in the mountains. The biggest seller was ginseng, which was sold in China as a tonic.